moving the prison to the Salt Lake Airport, the worst decision since Donald Trump decided to run for president.
Mayor Becker, Jackie Biskupski, and the Fall Classic, a mayoral race, and one of them, I think the mayor, needs a Trump bump in the polls.
Jim and Greg are defending Donald Trump. Give me a break. This is both sides of the aisle, but first, this news. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and on the political right is Speaker Greg Hughes.
Good morning, Natalie.
Great to be with you again, Greg. And on the political left, State Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Good morning.
You know, I am so excited to talk about the mayoral election in Salt Lake City. A lot of big surprises happening this week. But let's start out by talking about Mr. Donald Trump. We haven't had, you know, a both sides of the aisle since that first debate. Man, that was entertaining.
I loved it.
Disappointingly so. Like, it's supposed to be a lot of substance, but it was actually the talk of the town.
It was. Everybody wanted to pick on the Donald. Wanted to make sure that he came out of there wounded and not viable. But I think that has backfired on the political class. I think they came with their instructions or their intentions to make him look bad. And I'll tell you what, the guy is not shinied up. His messages clearly have not been focused. These are not focus grouped messages. This guy, but I think there is an authenticity and not a pandering to one political side or the other. When you're the only guy that raised your hand and says, I don't know that I'm ready to commit to supporting the Republican nominee if I'm not it, that is not pandering to that Republican Party. I'm going to tell you that I think that it has worn thin in this country the kind of shined up, say nothing so you don't offend anyone type of rhetoric that we constantly hear. He is a contrast to that. And if that brings more eyes to that debate and these good candidates can really talk about the issues and more people watch, because you have to admit Donald Trump is one of the reasons you have record viewership on this, I think it's all good.
Greg's just watching my body language as he's talking, because I'm just getting increasingly less
comfortable. You got to quit dry heaving when I talk. It's distracting.
Well, and
Natalie.
Then I'm sort of like, and you know, I'm the woman in the studio here. I mean, I think it's awful. It's sure entertaining, but it's awful. Jim,
I'm with Hughes on this.
Because it serves your political interests.
I am so sick and tired of poll-driven, tested marketing, every line, we have robots for politicians, and we would have more robots than the state level, except we can't afford them. So I despise virtually everything the guy says, but I like somebody that looks in the camera at least and doesn't have somebody whispering in his ear and hovering around and saying what the poll test or what this particular group says or whatever. You know, amen to that. I can forgive a candidate who I totally disagree with, who's blunt, who's honest, who looks at me and says, "You're full of crap, Senator." I can deal with that.
You guys are making this argument for authenticity, but
yes,
he's authentically awful. Come on.
You can say that, but look at us talking about him. look at us talking about these issues. You've never had a Republican debate watched more widely accepted or tuned into like you did that night, and you cannot ignore that the reason is that people want to watch Donald Trump. Now, not as a sideshow either. What I think is going to happen here is that the American people, as this process continues, they're going to get to know these candidates even better. And I think that there's going to be a battle of ideas that goes on the Republican side for president. And the public, whether it was the draw because of Trump, they're going to understand this better. And then you have on the Democrat side Hillary Clinton. And crickets, okay?
Maybe.
And
probably.
If you don't have that opportunity to introduce your ideas and see that there are – I mean, as long as the Republicans do it smart, I think this is a way to get the American people more comfortable with the Republican brand and what they're trying to promote as good ideas for the country. And I think it's net-net all upside, Natalie.
Oh, my goodness, Greg.
I love it. To think that Donald Trump
is helping the Republican brand.
It
I'm in the
great.
Big tent Republican Party, and it just doesn't make sense to me. I think the reason you guys like Trump is you're kind of like him. Both of you are very
but what's
spirited.
What's that say about you?
They're
when you
high-fiving
say you don't
in
like
the
him.
Studio. You guys are very spirited. You speak your mind. You're inconsistent.
Oh,
how
you hear that, Jim?
How do you unravel this from the Republican Party? I mean, how does he
He's going to win.
Yeah, I mean,
here's
tell me the
No, no, no. So, let that wander through. He's leading the polls. There is some shot that Donald Trump is going to actually be the nominee of the Republican Party. How cool would that be?
Natalie thinks I've completely lost my mind, let me just say this. If you go back to the 2011, at the same month and year before the Republicans ultimately picked their nominee the next summer, Mike Huckabee was leading the race. Okay, I think Perry was in second. They weren't part of the conversation leading up to the summer convention for the Republican Party. So I will say, all kidding aside, and even I'm not joking when I say that I like Donald Trump in this race. I will tell you this, that who's leading now is no indicator of where this thing is going to go. But I will tell you this, this Frank Luntz guy does these focus groups on Fox News after these debates. He's been doing it for years. And he walked out of there saying, the big loser, the candidate that imploded was Donald Trump, and the big winner was Mike Huckabee. Well, the post polls after that debate has Donald Trump at 32% of support, and the next four Republican candidates' percentages combined equal 32%.
Yeah.
So these inside the Beltway consultants and focus groups, they don't have a clue.
But Greg, this is the problem, because Donald Trump is of an ego that he won't let it go. So even when he starts to fade, let's say in the Republican stars or whatever, he'll take 30% of the electorate with him and run as an independent.
I honestly think if you treat Donald Trump straight up, if they are all just going to go and attack him and treat him like a pinata every day, I do think a guy like him and a billionaire, whatever he's done, he's certainly used to doing things his way. He may push back and buck against a Republican machine. But I thought that some of the very astute and smart candidates have been saying, I'm not willing to criticize Donald Trump, because there is certainly something about his message that's resonating with the American people, and we should be paying attention. And the more – and I've even heard some candidates say, if Donald Trump were the nominee, they'd support him. I think you start giving some mutual respect here. I think that Donald Trump – ultimately supports the Republican nominee if it's not him.
And I think what happens is he's so full of himself that he will not let it go, and he'll either be the nominee, which is a disaster for the country, in my opinion, or he will take an independent party and it will help Jim's party.
Well, it'll be Ross Perot in 92. Yeah. I mean, that would be – Bill Clinton got less votes than Michael Dukakis, but he beat George Herbert Walker Bush because of Ross Perot.
Any last comments on Trump? And I bring that up because if not, I'm going to ask you about Utahns for Bernie Sanders. Apparently, there's a group that's been formed.
Yeah, there is. And you know what? To put Sanders in the same pile, though, as Trump, really is an injustice.
I agree.
You know,
to Trump. To Trump.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, he's an also ran.
I think
Trump's
Joe Biden
right
is going to jump into this whole thing.
Okay, I do too.
So
I think you're
Biden
right.
Gets
and
in?
And we're going to have a real.
Do you
real
think
race.
That's a good thing? Have you heard some of this man's comments in terms of
winging it? I know Joe Biden, and Joe Biden is no Donald Trump, I'll tell you that.
But we have issues, though, where, I mean, with Hillary Clinton, the candidate, she's got these email problems, and you know, sure as day, they're going to get thicker and more convoluted and more serious. She's now having to turn over her server because they found classified information on it. I don't know. I don't think it bodes well for the Democratic Party. And all of this is just making me think that Trump has a shot at the White House, which just breaks my heart.
Isn't there any part of you, though, that says if Vladimir Putin is going into Crimea and he's running the show and he's keeping Assad in power in Syria?
Like, I don't think
don't
he has
you
the
want a
background.
Guy,
I don't think he
don't
has
you
the
you want
temperament?
A guy that can actually go toe-to-toe with Putin? I want a guy who's not going to get shoved around. And I swear to you, Vladimir Putin has been shoving this country around
apparently
for a long time.
Trump hotel properties, they give out water bottles, and he has his picture on them. That sounds very Putin-like to me. I don't want a Putin for the president of the United States of America.
I want someone that can, you know, push back on Putin's what I want, whoever that candidate, whoever that nominee would be.
You know, it just depends. Are we at the beginning of World War I or the beginning of World War II? You know, at the beginning of World War I, we stayed out and stayed out and stayed out, and we probably should have stayed out for the whole dang thing. Mm-hmm. The beginning of World War II, it was just the opposite. So you've got to have a president that knows, is he facing the enemy of World War I and we just ought to back away and we shouldn't be sending more troops to Iran and we shouldn't be doing that? Or is there a Pearl Harbor there? And that takes wisdom. I'm not sure Mr. Trump is there.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined by Greg Hughes and Jim DeBacchus. In our next segment, we're going to talk about the Salt Lake City mayoral race.
This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Greg Hughes on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. All right. So Mayor Becker, running for a third term, has the primary this week. Jackie Biskupski trumps him. The ballots aren't done counting yet. Has a 15-point lead, if I have my numbers right. I feel like Mayor Becker's been hit by this triple storm. It's the prison relocation, it's the third term bite, and then it's this chief, you know, police chief Burbank. Jim,
you know, I don't want
you to sit here and just, you know,
No, I'm not. I feel bad for Ralph. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ralph has not been a bad mayor. Mm-mm. Ralph has worked hard. Ralph is a serious guy who solves serious problems and rolls up his sleeves. I think he really has been misserved by a couple of things. One, a staff that is totally insular. And second, I think he really is kind of underneath it, kind of bored with the job. And he's been looking at D.C. and he decided to run for the third term when he couldn't really get anything in D.C. And I know that sounds like a bad cheap shot, but I hate to see Ralph's all the great things he has done. And maybe he can pull it out. I mean, it's possible that he'll recognize that he is not connecting with voters. I see it all the time. But I don't think he knew that he hasn't been connecting with voters. And maybe it's a wake-up call, and maybe they've got a lot of money, and maybe he will be able to pull it out. But I think this is maybe what happens after 8 years.
Yeah, it's part of the perfect storm.
So don't
go for three terms as Speaker of the House.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. I wouldn't say that it's the issues, Natalie, specifically that you've brought up. Mm-hmm. This is what I think is. I mean, well, let's look at these percentages. Jackie Biskupski got 46% in a crowded primary field. Mm-hmm. We're not talking one versus the other. What were there, five?
Mm-hmm.
Five or six?
And serious good count.
And when you can get as high as 46%, or you can have a separation between you and the eight-year incumbent mayor.
Who's been
by
successful.
15% in a crowded field. Any political consultant, anyone that's ever been through this process almost mm-hmm. says, I don't know how Ralph comes out of that. I will tell you this. I truly believe that what you're seeing is voter fatigue mm-hmm. in terms of Ralph. And the other issue is, I think that, look, Ralph has beat money before. When Jenny Wilson ran, she was kind of the favorite. She mm-hmm, was well-funded.
Sure. Great name.
Her father was the mayor, well-loved mayor of Salt Lake City. She was the natural.
She's been a leader in the county.
Ralph walked every single neighborhood, and he can outwork money all the time. Where I think he's seeing this problem is, first, I think there's inherent voter fatigue. The second issue is this. The mayor was getting beat up on the sexual harassment cases that were emerging in the fire department as well as the police department. And in a campaign season, the mayor tried to drill down on the sexual harassment charges, and he was getting beat up by these opponents saying, you're in charge. Mm-hmm. This should not be happening inside the police department. As he went to Chief Burbank to solve that problem and he saw pushback, ultimately what he did to account for or to deal with the sexual harassment problem of which he was getting beat up on was to fire the chief. Within 90 seconds of that decision, the narrative changed from this police department's a mess and you're responsible to how could the mayor fire such a nice guy? I watched that pivot politically and nobody really noticed, everyone just assumed the narrative that he just made such a terrible decision, I thought, boy, this guy's in trouble.
Something's up.
Because I don't think you can maneuver out of that if you can't win in that scenario.
Yeah, so in my world, political center, I mean, I think that Jackie Biskupski, Mayor Ralph Becker, they are both great candidates. I think the city will be well run under either candidate. I do think that Mayor Becker has a really good record. This is just coming from my interaction with the city. I mean, whether it's the well-managed airport, the North Temple redevelopment, the downtown rising success, civility within the mayor's office, the convention hotel, the non-discrimination ordinance in Salt Lake City. I mean, these are all things that Salt Lake City has been a leader on and done a great job. And quite frankly, before Mayor Becker, it felt like a bit of a mess
mm-hmm.
from my vantage point.
I would agree.
But I should also say that I'm a friend of Ralph Becker's. I've run rivers with him and, you know, he's a friend of mine. So as you kind of walk through this, the good news is the city has two great candidates. Interesting to study what's happened.
I consider Ralph a friend. I've served with him in the legislature. I've served with Jackie in the legislature. And so I consider both of them friends. And I think that the good news here in a race like this is it is for the residents and the daytime population of Salt Lake City, our capital city. It is a win-win in terms of the leadership style of both. And But I look at the political climate, and there is a high hill for this incumbent mayor, for Ralph, to climb. And it's going to be very difficult
more
for him.
More to come on this. Now, the state legislature did not do a favor to Mayor Becker this week in making the prison relocation decision. And, there's a part of me that just thinks if the mayor of Salt Lake City was a Republican, that they maybe would have delayed this till after the election.
It is inevitable that there's going to be accusations of politics. I mean, we're a political body. How can you say that politics isn't at play?
It's just a no-win situation for a sitting mayor.
But I will tell you that process started 4 years ago in terms of selecting a site. And there isn't a master genius in the world that could have narrowed that decision down to that primary day. I don't think anyone's that good. And by the way, that decision was bipartisan and unanimous. That means that it was in a bipartisan way, Republicans and Democrats, that I think on the objective information in front of them, pick the right site.
If it were going to Sandy, and if Mayor Dolan were up for re-election, and if it was highly controversial, and he was not successful in keeping it out, do you think the timing would have been just like it is?
Honestly. You bring up a good point. There might have been minimally the attempts to try and move that either way. But let me ask you, so is it better on the eve of the November election? Or are you going to go punt that into the next calendar year?
2 weeks after, just to take the whole point
some would argue that the day of was the day that would be the least problematic because of the mail-in votes. Some could say that staving it off until most of those ballots but without knowing what city, and early enough before you vote in November is probably the best time politically to have made that
decision.
Jim,
how do you read all this? I know there's a lot of feelings
here. Okay, three or four things. First of all, in 100 years when they speak about Speaker Hughes, they may well say he's the guy that got that dumpy, miserable jail out of our district, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, that is for his people and for his neck of the woods and for whatever, this is the golden ring. And Greg deserves credit. And he's going to say, blah, blah, blah. It's been 4 years and all the rest. Yeah, well, you got it done. And for your constituents and for what you're trying to do, it really didn't matter where it went, but it's out of your neck of the woods. And if the state is smart, and I'm not convinced they are, and we just turn and we say we need that $550 million plus the infrastructure immediately, and we're going to run out and sell that, and we're going to put it in the homes, and we're going to just make that money back. If we're that dumb, then it will have been a complete catastrophe, because this little gem of property has the ability to keep giving back generationally for the next 100 years. And I am very nervous that the budget screamers are going to say, we're not going to bond for this. We got to do it, which will force us into short-term solutions on that very valuable property. So that is a big concern of mine.
That's
What's the next step going to be?
Yep.
Are we going to have Adobe's out there, or are we going to have strip malls and homes? Yeah. One has a great future for our state. The other turns it into something that is not really going to be all that productive.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Tell us what happens next, Greg.
So look, Governor Huntsman, when he was running for governor, John Huntsman Jr. was running against Scott Matheson Jr. And the issue about if you should rebuild a prison was being discussed in 2004, 11 years ago. There was a need to redesign and rebuild that prison back then. It was a campaign promise, frankly, from Governor Huntsman. The reason I believe that you didn't see that ever happen is that there was an economic analysis of that area that Jim's just described. And if you don't generate new dollars that could actually pay for the expense of a redesign and rebuild, then the dollars you would use are the dollars that you could have spent on your public schools or somewhere else. And the reason why you haven't seen for the last decade any kind of serious commitment to the redesign or rebuild of that state prison is because it's never outpaced the other priorities that the state faces come budget time. But if that area and the new economic studies, and look at Lehigh, all you have to do, Natalie, is go over to Lehigh and look at what's going on that no one saw coming a decade ago, and know that kind of opportunity is there. The economic analysis says, as Jim has pointed out, if done right, and there is a commitment to do it right, you can see new tax generation, new dollars generate that will pay for the kind of rebuild and redesign that we have needed for a long, long time. I'm convinced it's the right way to do it. And I agree with Jim. You got to do it right. You got to stay close to those economic analysis, or
it's the combination of a single landowner, I-15, Bangor Highway, tracks, and proximity to the techs.
Here's what I did. I sat down with those four sites, and I got every report out, and I said over 2 days in Mexico, all right, I'm an investor. This is my money. Forget about whose location and whose backyard and all the rest. If I were writing the check for this for some kind of a plan or to do something, where would I put it? Salt Lake. By that, I think, I hope, totally honest, objective evaluation would not have come close to
really.
And let me tell you why. The initial amount, everybody agrees, is going to be considerably higher in Salt Lake. And the justification for that is that over 50 years, the closer proximity really outweighs the added initial costs. The problem with that analysis is it assumes that 50 years later, the relationship between the city and Sugar House is our first prison, and the relationship between Draper and our prison and our population centers will be the same. And I don't think they took that into consideration, because if you took the Utah County situation and you use one of those and you did it for 25 years from now, those proximity issues to all the things that they're claiming in year 30 and year 35 and year 40 and year 50 are still going to have that same distance, don't play in. So I think it's going to cost us more initially, and I think in the long run, we're going to end up paying more. And the second thing is, as you look at the economic opportunity of the airport and that proximity, it's irreplaceable to a lot of industries that we're trying to attract. So those are the reasons why I think that site really was picked a lot politically by Utah County legislators or people in Utah County that influenced it, to make it appear as though in the long run this is going to cost a lot more if we put it in a place other than the international
Greg,
airport.
Greg, quick rebuttal
just
to that.
Just real quick. It's 3 miles west of the airport. So the amount of land and opportunity between the international airport and where this prison would be on 7200 West, there is fertile ground and great opportunity for economic development. And in fact, bringing some of those utilities and infrastructure out there will speed up and allow for that development to occur sooner rather than later. Off of I-80, where that off ramp is, I don't believe you could see the facility from Interstate 80. Here's the thing that surprised me. I thought that some of the initial costs, which are higher for that area, because the land has its challenges in terms of its proximity to the lake. That was a good thing, because that was land that was less likely to be developed. That was land that would not interrupt the population growth and the economic development of communities. But you have this scenario where you can't win. If you pick undesirable land, well, that land's too expensive and you shouldn't have picked it. Well, let's pick better land that's closer to infrastructure. Well, that's going to interrupt population and economic development.
I thought they picked
a great place that was close enough to courts and hospitals and roads, but also was a land that I don't believe you'll see developed otherwise. And I think it could be a spur for other development.
My economic reading of it is it's a pretty good location, but that's just me. We need to go to gripes. Jim, what do you want to gripe about
today? We are already at gripes. All right.
You've always got a Rolodex of gripes, don't you?
My gripe is turning into a compliment this week. Rarely do we see actual political courage on the part of elected officials. There's too much is what Greg characterizes as all of this complaining and whining and
do you get the feeling Greg is about to compliment a Democrat?
I think it's coming, Natalie. Hang on.
Ben McAdams did something dramatic this week that I think deserves a big compliment. He looked Omni Hotel. This county, this state is in desperate need of a convention hotel. We've got to start competing with Anaheim and with the big cities, and we're not. We're competing with Albuquerque's and the Boise's. We need that convention hotel. We only had one bidder to build it. The pressure on Ben was tremendous to approve a deal, a crummy, miserable, rotten deal with Omni Hotels. He looked him in the eye and said, buzz off, and now we got to start the process. But that's political courage, and I love seeing it in Ben.
Congratulations, Ben.
My gripe, the EPA accidentally releases mine waste into the San Juan River, okay? Is there any end to the irony of this? What I have marveled, though, other than – and how does the EPA fine itself for the damage it's done to this river? I don't know how you pick a stick and beat yourself for it.
When but they
the
guys regulate that are supposed everybody to, else and
yeah,
do this.
The guy that's the group that's supposed to absolutely come down and be the enforcers have done this
contractor
to this river
air.
That blows my mind. But what my gripe is that I don't see – this on the tip of the tongue of my good friend Jim right now in his absolute outright rage over the mistreatment and the harm to this environment. I don't see the Democrats ready to just storm the gates for what's happened to that river and all of the consequences inherent. I don't hear it.
I
think that
say,
is selective outrage and the EPA doing what it's done to that river. It's just you couldn't make this stuff up.
It's a dark day at the EPA, and I thought about it as my gripe, but instead I'm just going to share something a little personal. My beautiful mother, Marcia White Egan, she's a big fan of the show, listens to it every week. She taught me conservative values and a liberal heart. That's what I represent in the political center. Passed away Sunday night. This one's for you, Mom. It's all right. She passed away peacefully. This one's for you. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. The program's produced by Ross Chambliss. Thanks for listening.